Hello and welcome to addclasses.com. My name is Tara McGillicuddy and I am the founder and director of addclasses.com. I would like to welcome all our new members and all of our returning members. And I am very happy to have Dr. Ari Tuckman back at addclasses.com. Tonight, Dr. Tuckman is going to be presenting a two-part webinar event, Understanding and Applying the Science of Time Management. And tonight he will be doing the first part, which is understanding the science of time management. So with that, I'm going to welcome Dr. Ari Tuckman back and hand everything over to you right now.
All right. Thank you. So it's great to be here. It's kind of been a while, actually, Tara. We were talking about that it's kind of been a while since I've done something with you. So it's good to be back. And I'm really excited about this topic here. So, I've presented on time management before and I've written about time management, and obviously for ADHD, time management is kind of a big thing, right? And there's all sorts of good tips out there and there's lots of other presenters doing good stuff in the world of ADHD on time management. But this topic kind of, for me specifically, like this topic of kind of like the science of time management, kind of it came to me as I was sort of thinking about it that, you know, there's all this kind of depth there that goes beyond just these kind of basic time management strategies like, you know, set a timer and things like that. And I always like to know, like, what's the reasoning underneath things, or like what's the deeper wisdom there? Because I feel like if you can understand the big concepts, then it's easier to apply it into your individual specific situation, whether it's you in your own life or me as a psychologist working with clients or coaches or whoever. So this actually started out as a one-part standard one-hour presentation. And what happened is, as I was working on it, I just kept kind of like coming up with more and more stuff where I was like, oh, I definitely have to put this, and I don't want to skip that, and boy, would it be a crime if we left that thing out. So I just kind of kept adding material to it, and then I was like, oh, man, this is way past an hour. So I called Tara, like a week ago, and we made this into a two-parter, so hopefully that extra hour is worth it for everybody. So today, as Tara said, we're going to talk more about kind of understanding time management, and that's setting us up then for tomorrow, which is really more about applying time management. So our big concepts we're going to talk about today are a couple things that you perhaps have come across before. So the first one being something called time horizon, and the second one being something called temporal discounting. And these are kind of related, but it sounds technical, but hopefully I'll explain it in a way that makes sense. So, but let's begin with a quote from Russell Barkley, who is kind of like the guru in the world of ADHD, and he's got a lot of great quotes, but one of them that we'll just kind of start off here with is that time is the ultimate yet nearly invisible disability afflicting those with ADHD. So for Barkley, time is a big thing as it relates to ADHD, and I have to assume that for most of our listeners, you can relate to that, that time and time management is a big struggle. So let's talk first with just some basic stuff about sense of time and time management. So one of the executive functions involves what I call the sense of time, and different authors kind of slice and dice the executive functions each in their own way and kind of add in different things and, you know, separate them out and whatever. But in the model that I've written about in my workbook and in some other places, I call it sense of time. So the sense of time and time management basically involves a constantly shifting fluid balance between the various tasks that we have to do or the priorities or goals that we're pursuing in the time that's available. In that success in life, whether you're a kid who's a student or you're an adult running a family out in the workforce, whatever, success in life requires good time management because we're constantly juggling all the things that we need to do, want to do, feel like we should do versus the time that's available and all the things that we just really like want to do or would prefer to do or are more interesting than the stuff that we don't really feel like doing, but we kind of know that we should. So some people then, that internal clock, that sense of time, that executive function of the sense of time, some people's internal clock, it ticks loudly, and they just have a clear sense of, like, roughly what time is it now? How long have I been doing this thing I'm doing? I got to switch gears in a little while to that other task I need to do. And then lo and behold, roughly around that time, they're pretty good at going, bing, I think it's been 10 minutes. Oh, indeed it has. It's been 10 minutes, time to get up and go pick up my kid at the soccer field or whatever. By contrast, some other people, that internal clock, it ticks more softly. Like, they just don't hear it. They don't feel the passage of time in the same way. They're not as aware of the passage of time. They're not as good at sort of using time and planning time. And as a result, they struggle more in a number of different ways that we'll talk about. Now, the good news here is that even if your internal clock, even if that internal sense of time is not as strong as you would like it to be, we can supplement internal abilities with external systems and tools and strategies. So, like, all that other stuff that other presenters are talking about when they talk about time management and ADHD. So there's lots of really good strategies you can use. And, of course, the goal of this presentation here is to help you understand why some of that stuff works better for you, perhaps, and why some of it maybe doesn't work as well. And that, you know, the better you understand that deeper logic, the better you're able to apply things in the moment. So time management, then, is, you know, we talk about time management often as if it's like one thing. But really, when you get down to it, without having to look really that hard, what you can see is that time management is really pretty multifaceted. And it's not one ability, but rather it's a collection of a bunch of, like, sub-abilities, if that's what we want to call them. So as an example, and this is not, like, a definitive list, but this is kind of what I could think of as I was, you know, putting this together. So time management involves the ability to set priorities among competing options. In other words, kind of planning well. It involves the ability to predicting how long an activity is going to take. Obviously, if the more accurate you are at predicting something, the better you are then at planning it. Time management also involves the ability to sequence various activities, taking certain time restrictions into account. So, for example, okay, I have to call the bank. That's not my most important thing to do today, but I got to call them before 5 or whenever it is the bank closes these days, or 3 or something. So that has to happen before 3. I got to look this thing up on the internet. I could do that at midnight if I wanted to. So the internet thing is more important, but the bank has a restriction, so I guess I got to do the bank thing first. So, like, that sequencing and getting the order right in terms of the different tasks you need to do. We need to monitor the passage of time while we're doing things. You know, how long have I been doing this? Is it the right amount of time? Is it time to switch to something else? Is it too much time? Is it not enough time? Whatever. We need to be aware of how much time has passed. Kind of related to that is noticing that a particular time is getting close and has perhaps come. So, you know, that thing of, I got to call that guy back at 2 o'clock. You know, we said 2, I got to call him at 2. Is it now getting close to 2? Is it 2 yet? Is it 2 now? How about now? How about now? Bingo, now it's 2 o'clock. And then finally, time management also involves a certain amount of kind of readjusting priorities and reshuffling your schedule a little bit as circumstances change. So maybe speeding up a little bit, reducing how well you do something, changing course, whatever. So making those shifts as you need to. Of course, good time management also requires good attention. Or another way of putting it is that time management requires distraction management. So you could have the best plan in the world, but if you get distracted halfway through, then the plan's not going to work out. And whatever good intentions you walked in with kind of get lost along the way. And possibly you don't get credit with others for those good intentions, because, of course, we look to others' actions to infer their intentions. And if what you say you're going to do doesn't look enough like what you wind up doing, people are going to, you know, wonder whether that really was what you intended to do. So there's this, you know, ADHD thing called hyperfocus that I'm sure everybody's familiar with. So on the one hand, hyperfocus can look like what it is really awesome attention. It's really focused, kind of locked in attention. But really, hyperfocus, a little bit more accurately, is it's the loss of awareness of time passing. So you get so absorbed in the thing that you're doing right now that you don't notice that a certain amount of time has gone by, or that it's now coming close to a time where you should transition to something else. So to manage time well requires not only going into it with a good plan, but then you also got to follow that plan. And that requires good attention to what the tasks are, as well as a little bit of attention held in reserve to monitor the passage of time. So this is where, and of course all the executive functions kind of, you know, relate to each other or function together. So this is where working memory comes in, which is another executive function that probably a lot of you guys have heard of. But basically we use working memory to hold in mind, to keep in attention the tasks that we're doing now and to kind of resist distractions. So, you know, one way of describing working memory is that working memory stores what we're paying attention to. So if you can hold in mind, this is the thing I'm doing, it more strongly, it then makes it your attention a little bit more kind of impervious to the intrusions of other distractions or other thoughts that run through your mind. Ultimately, though, time management is not just about this one moment and is this the task I should be doing or is that distracting thing over there the thing I should be doing. But it's really time management is about the future, or another way of saying it is that time management serves the future. And the reason is that most tasks that we do in life require some sort of thought to the future. Because unless you have a task that is extremely short and can be done right away, that, in other words, it's really all about the present moment, most things are done now, and then they're done a little bit later, and then they're done a little bit later, and then the future reward comes for it. Or perhaps a future punishment comes if we don't do all those things that we're supposed to do. So we manage time in the moment in order to pursue more distant future goals, so that we're not simply responding to whatever is going on around us in the moment. It's not just knee-jerk response, whatever distraction or stimulus or situation pops up, but it's about being kind of intentional and conscious about the choices that we're making and that we're trying to create a better future for ourselves. But in order to do that, in order to work towards the future, one of the things that we need to do, or first, before we can work towards the future, we need to do a certain amount of disconnecting from whatever is going on in the present moment. And this is, again, where Russell Barkley comes in, when he talks about response inhibition. So response inhibition meaning the ability to hold back a response. So according to Barkley and his response inhibition theory of executive functions, the executive functions kind of, this is the way he doesn't use this language, this is the way I describe it. The executive functions live in that space between stimulus and response. That if a stimulus comes into your world, which could be a ringing cell phone, it could be somebody talking in the cubicle behind you, it could be a passing thought that you have inside your own mind. If a stimulus comes in and you, bam, immediately respond to it, there's no space in there for the executive functions to do their thing. There's no ability to pause and think about what time is it now, what else do I need to do, what else do I have going on, what was that thing I was working on again anyway, let's think about the past, how has this worked out in the past, how do I want this to work out in the future. So, like, that's all executive function stuff, and sometimes it happens really fast, but it's all executive function. But we need to pause for a moment and not just knee-jerk respond to the stimulus in front of us in order for the executive functions to do their thing. So time management then involves internal control rather than external or environmental control over our behavior. That time management helps us separate out what's going on around us and how we respond to it. So again, it's kind of similar to the executive functions in that way, or maybe a better way of putting it is that the executive functions kind of operate in the service of time management. So this then raises a question where I think we need a philosophy major to help us with this one, and I'm definitely not that. But the question is, does time management serve free will, or is it vice versa? Does free will serve time management? So, you know, if there's a philosopher on the line, they can help us kind of tease that out. But you know, as far as I can see, I think that there's a connection there, that having that ability to make choices that overrule just what's going on around us really does kind of bring in the whole question of free will. So it does get a little bit kind of heady in some of this when you think too much about it. This then brings us to our first kind of big topic or first big concept that we're going to talk about tonight, which is the topic called time horizon. So this is an extremely important concept when it comes to understanding ADHD and time management. So we're going to talk about time horizon right now, and a little bit we're going to talk about another big concept called temporal discounting. But time horizon. So time horizon, basically the idea is, how close in time does something need to be in order for somebody to be motivated into action? So, like, if you think about the actual horizon, when you look out on the horizon and you see something out there coming at you, how close does it need to be in physical space before you react to it? Right? So that's like your standard horizon. Time horizon then is how far out or how close in time does something need to be before you're going to act on it. So if you take a five-year-old and you say, okay, a week from now, if you make your room, if you clean up your room, then you get to have ice cream. So for a five-year-old, a week is way too far out there. A five-year-old cannot see a week into the future. And they will not clean up their room right now in order to get even 100 pounds of ice cream a week from now. But if you tell a five-year-old, if you clean up your room right now, then in 2 minutes you'll get some ice cream, then maybe you'll get them going on that. Now, as that five-year-old becomes 10 and then 20 and then ultimately 30, that time horizon moves further and further out in time. So something doesn't need to be right on top of a 20-year-old, hopefully, before they're motivated into action. So the older you get, the further out your time horizon becomes. So the further out into the future you start to think, and the further out into the future you start to see things and be motivated to act on it. Obviously, how quickly we act on something also depends on how interesting something is and how motivated we are to do it. So things that we really enjoy doing doesn't take a lot of push to get us to do it. Alternatively, things with really undesirable consequences also will tend to activate us earlier. So it's not like there's one number where, like, at 16, your time horizon is exactly 1 week, and at, 20, it's exactly a week and a half or anything like that. But just generally speaking, the older you get, the further out in time you tend to look. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't get somebody going on something before they really see it or feel it. So if you kind of bug somebody enough or nag them enough, you can get them going on something earlier. But that's not really in their time horizon. They're just doing it because they're tired of being nagged about it. So Barclay then talks about, and again, he's got lots of great phrasing of how he says things. He has this term he calls future myopia, that just like, you know, regular myopia means not being able to see far distances, Barclay talks about future myopia in ADHD, that folks with ADHD, they just don't see the future as clearly, which leads to the sort of little, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, but, you know, he sort of says, I think a bit tongue-in-cheek, that for folks with ADHD, there's basically two times. There's now and not now. So in other words, there's the present, and then there's this kind of vague future. So as a result, folks with ADHD tend to have shorter time horizons given their age. So if you have a 10-year-old, how they will be motivated to work on, or let's make this a little bit older. Let's say it's a high school sophomore. Regular, average, whatever high school sophomore who has a paper due on Friday might start working on that paper on, like, I don't know, maybe Tuesday, let's say. By contrast, a high school sophomore with ADHD in the same class, same teacher, same paper, is probably not going to start working on that paper on Tuesday. They're probably going to start working on that paper on, like, Thursday, possibly Friday morning, but hopefully Thursday night. So as a result, folks with ADHD have trouble planning into the future because they just don't see the future as clearly, and they're not motivated into action until that deadline gets a whole lot closer. So it creates this situation of kind of apathetically procrastinating, and then when all of a sudden that deadline kind of looms into view, then they're frantically scrambling to keep up with it or to do what needs to be done. But it's not a slow build where it kind of gradually, in a steady kind of way, but it's more like apathy, bam, panic, when all of a sudden now this future deadline is like right on top of them. In the process of making decisions about, you know, here it is Wednesday night, should I work on the paper or should I, you know, see what's going on Instagram, we're constantly doing this cost-benefit analysis. I can do this, but I can only do one of them at a time. Which one is it going to be? And that we're constantly making choices among lots of different things that we can do in the pursuit of lots of different kinds of goals. And because we can mostly only work on one thing at a time, they're always in competition with each other. And some of these things are really fun and exciting, and it takes very little effort to get ourselves going. Some of them are incredibly boring and tedious and painful, and it takes massive force of will to get ourselves going on it. But in that ability to pause between stimulus and response and the executive functions kicking in and doing their thing, it helps us sort through all those different options. So for a student, which is just kind of an easier example, I got a paper due on Friday, but I got reading to do, and there was that thing, I didn't do that yesterday, I got to get that done, but I got to text my girlfriend back because she gets kind of mad if I don't, and then I think there was something about soccer practice, was there a change in schedule, I got to look that up also, speaking of which, I got to pack my soccer stuff. So like here's, I don't know how many, 5 or 10 different things, all of which are at least somewhat important, but you can't do every single one of them at the same time. So it's the executive functions then that help us sort through that and prioritize it and order it and manage our time so we can get the most of those things done so it works out in the best possible way. Not perfect, but the best way of what's actually possible. This then brings us to the second big concept that we're going to talk about, which is temporal discounting. Now, this is a term that I think comes out of economics, and that basically kind of the idea is that the further out in time a reward or punishment is, the less that we feel it now. So if I say, I'll give you $100 tomorrow, you're going to be pretty motivated by that $100. If I say, I'm going to give you $100 a year from now, exact same $100. I could take this same $100 bill and seal it in an envelope and keep it for a year and swear to you up and down I'm going to give it to you a year from now. And even if you believe me that I will, you're going to be less motivated to do something for that $100 that you're going to get in a year than you're going to be motivated to do something for that $100 you're getting tomorrow. So basically what it means is that we, all of us, we feel the present more strongly than we feel the future. And because of that, we then wind up being tempted to maximize the present, but therefore at the cost of the future. So we'll do things now that we then pay a price for in the future. So something like smoking cigarettes. Obviously, it's bad for you in the future, but the people who do it enjoy it in the moment. Or eating Big Macs, or staying up a little bit later to just, you know, send one more email or watch one more show. All the, you know, that siren song of the present kind of lures us in. And then tomorrow or next week or in a year or in a decade, we then regret and go, oh, shouldn't have done that. So the whole, probably most of you guys are familiar with the whole marshmallow experiment, where basically they take a bunch of cute kids and then they put they sit them down in a room and they say, I will give you one marshmallow right here. Is one marshmallow on the table in front of you. You can eat this marshmallow right now if you want, no problem. Or if you can wait 2 minutes, I'll come back in the room and I'm going to give you a second marshmallow. If you haven't eaten the first one, I will give you a second one. And really, that whole experiment is all about temporal discounting. And there are some kids who say, you know what? Two marshmallows is nice, but this one right in front of me, I just can't resist it. I'm going to eat it right now. And then others will say, this one marshmallow sure looks good, but man, if I could get another one, that's even better. So those kids, they hold off and they hold off and they hold off and they distract themselves and they do all sorts of stuff to not eat the marshmallow, and they get rewarded with a second marshmallow. So the kids who can hold out for the second marshmallow are doing less temporal discounting. They're less influenced by that delicious-looking marshmallow in the present and are better able to hold off for the second marshmallow in the future. So for folks with ADHD then, it's harder to plan for the future. It's harder to work towards the future because for folks with ADHD, their time horizon is shorter. In other words, things have to be closer in time before they're going to be activated to work on it. And as a result, they have greater temporal discounting. So they don't feel the future as much. So on account of the shorter time horizon, they don't see the future as clearly. But on account of the greater temporal discounting, they don't feel the future as strongly either. As a result, they tend to pick options then that have more immediate payoffs. So, I don't know, this is an overstatement, but anytime you are on social media, you're probably maximizing the present more than the future, let's say. But because folks with ADHD really feel that present so much more strongly than the future, they're less motivated then to sacrifice in this present moment in order to create a better future. Until all of a sudden now the future is like right upon them and the future has become the present. So all that kind of procrastination and the not planning ahead and the allowing themselves, so to speak, to get distracted that folks with ADHD do, this is it. Like, this is the stuff. It's about time horizon and temporal discounting and the temptations of the present outweighing the consequences of the future. So it creates a situation that to others who have longer time horizons and maybe less temporal discounting, the choices that folks with ADHD make kind of they can look like bad judgment. Like, why would you do that? Why would you eat one marshmallow when you could just wait a couple minutes and then have two marshmallows? That seems like a very reasonable thing to do, to wait for two marshmallows. So it looks like bad judgment, but it really, it's not that simple. That for folks with ADHD, it really comes down to this time management difficulty. So for folks with ADHD, they're making what feel like good decisions in the moment, even if down the road it turns out that that decision maybe wasn't as, didn't turn out as good as they were thinking in the moment, or perhaps weren't really thinking about in the moment. And past experience doesn't change it enough, because, you know, having burned yourself once in the past in a similar circumstance, you need to pause in the moment. You need to disengage from the distraction and the temptation and whatever else is more interesting to think about, how did this work out last time? And you need to think about it, and then you need to do something with that. And again, that's an executive function thing. And for folks with ADHD, it's harder to separate from the present moment and to think about the past and to think about the future. So just as the past experiences don't, you know, always, I mean, obviously sometimes they do, but sometimes they don't, a little bit too often they don't. Just as those past experiences don't change the decisions in the moment, neither do guilt-inducing lectures. So lectures don't change what's going to happen next time. They mostly change possibly how the person feels about themselves, but probably most likely how they feel about the person giving the lecture. That's really the most effective thing that lecturers do, is they change how their lecture recipient feels about the lecture giver. So then, in this context then of shorter time horizon and greater temporal discounting, for folks with ADHD, then, time, generally speaking, it's more vague. It's fuzzier. It's more fluid. You know, obviously, we all have that thing, like, time flies when you're having fun, and that's true. But for folks with ADHD, time really flies when they're having fun and really crawls when it's something boring. And I thought of this analogy, which is that it's kind of like measuring length, but with a stretched-out, warped ruler. But the problem is you don't know which inches are short on that ruler and which inches are long. So you can measure things. You can come up with numbers. Oh, 8.5 inches. But what does that actually mean? So, or kind of by analogy, it's almost like if you say, well, I think that was about 8 minutes there. But then you almost need to ask yourself, well, was that a boring minute or was that an exciting minute? Because if this was boring, that 8 minutes, what felt like 8 minutes, was probably like, I don't know, 2 minutes. And if it was really fun what I was doing, then that 8 minutes is really kind of more like, you know, that could be like an hour, but it only felt like 8 minutes. It's almost like you need to ask yourself, like, what's the exchange rate here between boring minutes and exciting minutes? And again, true for everybody, but more true for folks with ADHD. But if time feels very kind of vague and kind of changeable, you know, like the perception, the feel of a minute can vary so much, it almost raises the question of, like, what's the point of planning anyway? Because if you plan it, to plan it requires constant units, and good time management requires constant units. And if your units fluctuate too much, the planning doesn't get you as much as it should. As a result of these kind of this vagueness of time, folks with ADHD too often, and of course everybody listening knows this or you wouldn't be listening, they don't do the right things at the right time. That folks with ADHD are more likely to kind of run late or miss deadlines. Now, obviously not every single deadline and not running late every single time, but more so than folks without ADHD. So these are all kind of like relative terms. Some of this comes out of not planning enough beforehand, so not pausing, thinking, planning it out beforehand, or what's sometimes called best-case scenario planning, that when you when folks with ADHD do plan, they tend to underestimate how long each thing is going to take, and then lo and behold, it winds up taking longer. Or maybe it's a decent plan, but you get distracted on the side projects, and therefore things take longer than you planned for. Or that whole hyperfocus or just losing track of time and don't realize, uh-oh, it's time to shift gears to something else. And if you do realize, uh-oh, I'm running behind here, trouble with really kind of stepping back and reprioritizing and shifting gears when they're already running late. Beyond just that, there's also the whole issue, and I kind of mentioned this a little bit, of being focused not only on what's happening in this present moment, but also looking back to the lessons of the past and looking forward into the future to kind of like run through hypothetical scenarios and make some different choices in the moment. And this brings in the executive functions of hindsight, which means looking back and accessing the lessons of the past, as well as forethought, which means looking forward into the future and making good decisions about, you know, if I do this, da-da-da-da-da, as opposed to if I do this, oh, actually, blah-blah-blah-blah, that's really the better way to go. So because of this, folks with ADHD are more likely, because they don't access the past enough, often enough, they make some of the same mistakes, which is really frustrating, or if they don't pause to think about the future enough, then making some kind of what might be kind of predictable mistakes, like, duh, if I'd thought of it, I could see that that's how that would have worked out. Damn, I wouldn't have done that. And this trouble with accessing the past and the future comes right back to that response inhibition stuff, that trouble pausing long enough to be able to access the present or the past and the future. Or another way of putting it is that we need to disengage from the present in order to think beyond it. This then brings up yet another one of the executive functions. So like I said, the executive functions all kind of operate together. So there's an executive function called prospective memory. And basically prospective memory means remembering forward into time to say to about something that you need to do in the future. So that could be 20 minutes from now I need to do this, or as soon as I hang up the phone I need to do that, or next year I have to remember to do something or other. So it's carrying intentions forward into the future. Prospective memory relies on working memory in the moment, but also on the sense of time, which makes sense if you think about it, so that this idea of I need to do this at some point later requires the ability to say, ooh, it's now it's that later time. Now is the time I was going to, you know, check the internet and see if tickets are on sale yet or something. Unfortunately, because of this response inhibition stuff, folks with ADHD are more likely to forget what needs to be done. So even if you create a great plan and you're managing time well, if you forget that this afternoon I need to remember to, you know, call that guy back, then it's not truly a time management problem. Forgetfulness is not a time management problem, but the longer the delay between now and that future thing you need to do, or the further away the start time is, the more likely we are to forget something, any of us, but some people especially more likely. So it can look like a time management thing, that they didn't manage their time well or they ran out of time, but really it was just more about forgetfulness. So the consequences then, and these are not kind of small consequences, of poor time management is a lot more stress, a lot more scrambling at the last minute to put stuff together, so therefore more likely to forget things, more simple mistakes, kind of leaving things behind, not putting things back, stuff like that. A lot of folks with ADHD tend to be night owls, and I think part of that has to do with if you kind of procrastinate a bit, if you don't manage time well, like just little by little through the day, stuff gets pushed later into the night, which causes sleep deprivation when you don't get enough sleep, or you wind up you get more sleep, but you start the day late the next day, possibly less time for sex if you and your bed partner aren't getting into bed at the same time. Folks with ADHD tend to do more speeding, like they drive faster, and certainly running late is a good excuse, so to speak, or a good rationale for speeding. So more tickets, more importantly, though, more traffic accidents, so that's like serious stuff. And if you feel like you're always scrambling to get stuff done, it can lead to this feeling of just kind of like being a fraud, like, you know, man, if they only knew how I threw this together at the last minute. It looks okay, but man, if they only knew. On the social side, if you don't manage time well, people, friends, family, coworkers could see you as kind of a bit of a time waster or maybe even unreliable because you're not getting things done. And then finally, not working towards bigger, more important, and also more distant goals. So pursuing an education, going for those bigger career wins rather than just taking the thing that's right in front of you, health maintenance activities, relationships, things like that, you know, those bigger picture things. Having said that, you know, for all the ways that ADHD impacts time management, and for all the guilt-inducing lectures that undoubtedly everybody with ADHD has gotten over the years, do not make this into a moral issue. If you're the person with ADHD, or if you're the family member or the romantic partner or the whatever of somebody with ADHD, do not make this into a moral issue. And the reason is guilt-inducing lectures just breed resentment and resistance. They rarely motivate people to do better about things. So if you're the person with ADHD and time management has been a struggle for you, my strong advice here is that you make your own choices about what kind of life you want to live. And really, therefore, what are you willing to do for it? Because time management is about it's about what kind of life do you want to create for yourself. Everybody's going to have their own opinions about what kind of life you should be leading because they got, you know, ideas about the life they're living. And they're, you know, many people are a little too generous about sharing their opinions about what others should be doing. And ADHD is one of those things that it tends to evoke opinions from other people, shall we say. So if you want a life that is a little maybe more interesting, not in an exciting, chaotic kind of way, but like interesting meaning I have interesting things going on, I'm involved in some good stuff, I got lots of, you know, things happening in my life. And if you want a life that's a little bit more on the stable side, I know that can be kind of a dirty word in ADHD circles, but not like boring stable, but just sort of like stable as in I don't need to worry about the electricity getting cut off. If that's the kind of life you want to live, a life where you're accomplishing kind of some big and interesting things and, you know, some of the basic stuff seems to generally be taken care of, then probably you need to use some sort of a schedule, some sort of a reminder system, whatever, because anybody who's getting stuff done needs to use those things. I think for a lot of folks with ADHD, there's a resistance to that. And, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit more maybe next week, or not next week, tomorrow. But managing time is not just something that we're born with, and it's not this kind of innate ability that either it's there or it's not. Absolutely, it's something that you can work on, and obviously that's why everybody is here. So what we're going to talk about tomorrow then is how to apply these concepts that we talked about today. So time horizon and temporal discounting. We're going to talk tomorrow about how to externalize, how to see time more clearly by externalizing it. So in other words, not rely on that internal clock that doesn't tick loudly enough. So that's fine. Lots of ways to externalize it so you can see time more clearly. And then we're also going to talk about how to feel time more by increasing motivation. So seeing seeing time is one thing, but just seeing it doesn't necessarily get us, you know, spur us into action. So we also want to feel that time. So feel the future a little bit more so we can be activated in the present to do something with it. So that's what we're going to talk about tomorrow, and that's why I couldn't cram it all into 1 hour, so I broke it into two, and I think it's going to be a much better way of doing that. But why don't we take some questions then? So, Tara, if you got any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Yeah.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, good. Yeah, and for those of you who are submitting questions, you can do so towards the bottom of the webcast page. And tonight the questions are going to be more about, you know, understanding why it's happening instead of the strategies, which will be more about tomorrow night.
Right.
So how does the society that we live in now, the on-demand, instant gratification society that most of us live in right now, affect our time horizons?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the fact that so much is available on demand, it really does in some ways reduce some of that time management stuff. I mean, even like if we really want to talk about old technology, like I remember when you could program the VCR, like you'd put in a VHS tape, you could program it to record certain shows, so like Thursday at 8, Channel 4. So all of a sudden, you didn't have to be there while that show was on. And it was this really kind of liberating thing in terms of time management. So in some ways, that's great. And, like, I love DVRs. I love, you know, being able to fire up Netflix and just pull down whatever you want. But it does create this sense then that there are certain things, at least, that we no longer need to plan for. So I think the person who asked the question is really onto something, that in that sense, it does create a bit of a shorter time horizon because we don't need to plan it out. You just sort of like log in and away you go. Now, lots of other things in life obviously still need planning, and we still need to think ahead on them. But at least as far as media goes, yeah, you can have a very time horizon, not really a very short time horizon, and not really pay a price for it.
Okay. Now, what about the time wasters? We had quite a few questions about time wasters, like watching TV for hours at a time instead of doing the things that you want or need to do. Can you talk a bit more about that from, like, the why perspective?
Sure. So it really comes down to those two concepts of time horizon and temporal discounting. Now, it's possible, and we'll talk a little bit about this tomorrow as well. Now, it's possible that there's also a bit of an avoidance piece, meaning that you're kind of, you feel anxious or uncomfortable about that task you're supposed to be doing and instead kind of hide away in the TV because that is easier. But in the sort of like, if we're really kind of being kind of narrow definition here, the ADHD brand of procrastination, so to speak, is really not about anxiety, as in I feel anxious about working on that paper, so I'm going to watch TV instead. But it's rather, it's about apathy, meaning on Tuesday night, the paper due on Friday doesn't feel like anything. Like there's no sense of urgency. There's no fire under that student to get going on it until Thursday. And maybe it's not even Thursday, but it's like Thursday at 10 o'clock at night. All of a sudden now, they feel that paper. So on Wednesday, when they're watching TV, they're not churning their guts out. There's no butterflies in their stomach making them feel anxious. They don't feel it enough, you know, so that's part of the problem. Now, of course, their mom does, you know, she's churning her guts out if she knows about the paper due on Friday. So she feels anxious. But the student with ADHD or the adult with ADHD who, like, has a report for work or taxes or something due, they don't feel it because it hasn't entered their time horizon yet. And in terms of that, and then the temporal discounting, you know, TV actually feels pretty good. I'm kind of liking this watching TV. Mm-hmm. the, you know, here on Tuesday night or in here on Wednesday night, I'm still enjoying watching TV. Now, Thursday night, all of a sudden now, like, now that cost-benefit analysis has kind of, like, tipped the balance. And now all of a sudden, I guess this paper or this work report is more important. So I guess I'll work on that instead of just watching TV.
Okay. Now, what about the I'll do it tomorrow type of thing when someone's constantly doing that? How does that play into the whole time management or understanding it?
Right. So some of that has to do with, and again, we'll talk about this a little bit more tomorrow, but that there's a lot of things where the natural consequences, so to speak, aren't really felt until further down the road. So, you know, the student who gets a bad grade on a paper, there aren't direct consequences to that bad grade until either, you know, the earliest is a few days from now or a week from now when that bad grade shows up on the online report card, or maybe 3 years from now when they don't get into the college that they wanted. But that thing of 3 years from now, you're not going to get into the college you wanted, has zero effect on that high school sophomore today because they don't feel that. They don't see it. They're not thinking about it. You know, the thing of like, well, I'm going to skip the gym today. I'm not going to work out because I don't feel like it. You know, you don't die of a heart attack today because you didn't go to the gym, but you may be more likely years down the road to have greater health complications. So some of that, I'll do it tomorrow, comes from the fact that the consequences aren't yet being felt. And again, it's that temporal discounting, that like vague future of what may possibly happen isn't, you know, the person doesn't feel it enough in the moment to just bite the bullet and say like, I guess I'll just do this. Because whatever they're doing in the moment is far more interesting than this vague possibility of what might happen out there.
Okay. Now, what about motivation or lack of motivation when somebody gets into this constant cycle of not having enough time and just being overstressed? Can you talk a bit more about what's going on there?
Yeah, and certainly, you know, you could certainly see based on what it is that I've been talking about, and of course, anybody who's listening, probably much of what you've seen over the course of your life, but it's easy to see how this trouble with procrastination and trouble with getting going on things early enough can often snowball into these situations where then now there's like too much to do and there's too many things and there isn't enough time. And it's just kind of, you know, it's this just difficult, kind of messy, overwhelming situation. And then, of course, it becomes a whole different animal because at that point it's like it's not a matter of kind of not being able to feel the future and be motivated to work on something so much as there's too many things I don't even know where to start. But that's almost like a different kind of a situation because then it's just overwhelming and it becomes more about like anxiety management in the moment and then some ability to kind of step back, assess what needs to be done, make some, you know, prioritize, possibly make some hard choices about what isn't getting done. But, you know, like I said, it's easy to see how trouble managing time in the beginning can then lead to this overwhelmed situation later. And then, of course, that, you know, today's overwhelmed situation can then lead to future avoidance when it's just like, ugh, that was terrible. I don't want to deal with that again. And then just ironically kind of avoiding dealing with certain things rather than just biting the bullet in the moment and addressing it so that overwhelmed situation doesn't happen again.
Right. Now, what about the just one more thing or the, I guess, more about distractions? Like I'll check the email, I'll just be on it for 2 minutes, and that turns into 25 minutes, and you're an hour late for work.
Right.
Can you talk a bit more about that type of issue?
Yeah, and actually, I'm going to, and again, like these questions are all great because they're kind of bridging between today and tomorrow. And I'll talk about this a little bit more tomorrow when I talk about like how long does something actually take. but that thing of like, oh, just one more minute, just one more thing, just one more whatever. So, you know, I think that what it comes down to is it's trouble with disengaging attention from the current task and shifting towards the next thing that needs to be done. So walking away from the keyboard and saying, like, you know what, I'll deal with this email later, because now is the time I got to get up and go. So this is kind of that other side of distractibility. So, you know, when we talk about ADHD, the whole, like, distractibility of which is basically shifting attention when it preferably should have been when attention should be sticking. So the shifting and the distractibility is very obvious. But the flip side of that is that some of ADHD also involves sticking attention when preferably it should have shifted. So getting stuck on email when really what it is that you should have just, like, moved on to the next thing. So some of it is that it's just hard to pull off. Some of it also is that, you know, we all do this to some extent, that we rationalize, like, oh, I'll just take a minute. I just got to send one more email. How big a deal could that be? So we kind of, like, talk ourselves into it to make ourselves feel more comfortable in the moment, knowing that if we were really, really honest with ourselves, we'd say, like, yeah, but probably this is going to set me back late. And if I was really going to be honest with myself, that one more email thing fairly often becomes a lot more emails, and then it's not just a minute, but it's like 20 minutes or a half an hour, an hour. So do I want to roll the dice on that, that 1 minute's going to become half an hour, and then I'm going to get written up at work for it? You know, so some of it is that, it's that kind of that willingness, that optimistic willingness to believe that, yes, indeed, this will only be one more email in only 1 more minute, when the reality is, like, the betting man would not bet on this being a minute. They would bet on this is going to be much more than a minute.
Okay. What about someone who continuously talks them out of doing the project and tasks on their to-do list or that need to be done? Is this a time management-related issue, or is this something else?
So someone who talks themselves out of doing. Okay. So,
like,
not somebody.
Say they were going to do the dishes, and then they're like, no, I'm not going to do it now.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, it's an interesting question. So on the one hand, I might wonder, are these items on the to-do list just too optimistic to begin with, right? Because if you're just really not getting to them, maybe then – you need to ask yourself, you know, are these things I'm going to do anyway, or should I just kind of cut to the chase and leave some of those things off? But in that case, it may not, I mean, in the strictest sense of the term, it may not be a time management problem, because they're not running out of time to do the dishes, let's say, so much as they're choosing not to. Now, that may be that the thought of the future tomorrow morning of not having any clean dishes and then being kind of pissed about it, that may not be entering enough into their attention in the moment. They may not be feeling that future aggravation tomorrow morning today as they decide to watch another TV show rather than do the dishes. So that may be some of it. But, you know, maybe it's more complicated than that, and it's really just about the choices that they're making. For good or for bad, that they're just not motivated to do these things, that they're too good at talking themselves out of it. And, you know, at the deeper level, maybe it becomes a matter of spending some time and thinking about, like, you know what? What do I want my life to look like? Like, do I care about the dishes being done? Is that important to me? Is this the kind of life I want to be living? And maybe the answer is yes, but maybe the answer is no. I don't know. Like, it's not for me to decide what's acceptable. It's for them to decide what's acceptable. And, you know, what kind of a person do they want to be? Do they want to feel like the kind of person who does the stuff that they're supposed to do? Or is that not really kind of as important to them? And maybe that's okay, too. Now, of course, if you live with other people, those people are probably going to have some opinions about that as well. But you know, maybe there's something to decide there. I would also wonder, at the risk of being kind of shrinky about this, but is this person overly anxious? Is this person maybe overly depressed? Is there some other thing going on there that's inhibiting their ability to do what they need to do? You know, so there's that layer of it there as well. But I don't know. I mean, sometimes we just got to bite that bullet and do that stuff that we don't want to do. Good time management skills just set us up to be aware of what needs to be done and when it needs to be done. And again, this kind of leads into tomorrow, where we'll talk more about like motivation and things like that. So, like I said, these are all great questions. They're totally like bridging us from today till tomorrow.
Yeah, and we are actually at the end of the hour. I can't wait for tomorrow night's class, where you'll be giving a lot of the answers and talking about strategies and applying, you know, what we learned tonight. But before we get going, could you give out your contact information, how people can get in touch with you?
Sure. So my website, where you can get information about me, is adultadhdbook.com. And if you want to email me, it's ari@tuckmanpsych.com. I'm pretty easy to find online.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Tuckman, and thank you, everybody, for listening tonight's class. And we will see you tomorrow night. Thanks again. Good night.
All right.